Urgent announcement, America. It's time to rise up and reclaim our values. Welcome to Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. This is your platform for truth and action. Join Steve and our guests as we confront the critical issues facing our nation today. We stand together for a pro-American, pro-family future rooted in our foundational truths. From defending our liberties to preserving our cultural heritage, we're here to ignite insightful discussions and passionate advocacy. Don't miss a moment of this crucial dialogue as we work to reclaim our cultural integrity and shape a brighter tomorrow. Tune in and be a part of the movement. It's your journey to informed citizenship and action. And now, let's dive in and make a difference together. Here's your host, Steve Austin.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve Austin with Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by the Save America Now PAC. And I'm joined today with my co-host, Kelly Hansen. Kelly, how are you doing?
Doing great, Steve. How are you doing today?
Good. So we've got an exciting guest coming up in a few minutes that you and I are going to interview. I think the audience will enjoy what he has to say. He's actually not from California. He's from the state of Iowa and has had quite an impact on turning Iowa from a blue state to a red state. And he's going to talk to us a lot about how he did that. But Save America Now, just for the audience, that we stand for three things. We stand for sanctity of life, religious liberty, and capitalism. And so we do three things around that foundation. And one is to send out weekly e-blasts with our director, Chad Porter, in Texas, who writes these things. He has a ministerial background, does a great job of getting those e-blasts out every week on various timely topics. For example, when the incidents in Israel occurred, we wrote a very pro-Israel email blast informing folks about really what's going on there. And various pro-life issues that come up and other areas that are timely topics we get out to folks. So, the e-blasts are important things. We raise money across the United States to actually help candidates at the senatorial level in the U.S., at the congressional level, all Washington-focused. Then we do quite a bit in the southwestern United States. We've supported folks in Arizona and Nevada, and obviously a number of people here in California. And that is all the way from the U.S. congressional seats to, in fact, the city council seats and whatnot. So we're very active in that. And then thirdly, we do lunches every few months that have grown from a handful of people to several hundred people. And the lunches are really designed to provide platforms for candidates and other Christian thought leaders to talk about the need for Christianity and biblical Christianity. Kelly, you've been quite involved in this area. Share with us a little bit about what you've been doing recently.
Yeah, I got involved in this because of COVID and just with the tyranny that I was seeing in our government. But here locally, I really wanted to get involved in my own little town. I live in Fallbrook, California, and we're just kind of the northeastern corner of San Diego County, right before you get to Temecula. So I love our little town. We're very proud of this village of ours. So I wanted to get involved because of the education system. I have four boys. I definitely want to protect them. And in doing so, I really felt it was my civic duty to get involved with the town and also going to the schools, speaking to superintendents, going to the board meetings and making sure that everything is set up for their future. So, yeah, I got involved and I just keep on rocking. I mean, just keep meeting amazing people like you, Steve. And as I meet amazing people and patriots and people who actually care about the future of our children, but also biblical values in our society, bringing it back in God we trust, right? We can use that to pay for things, but a lot of people don't believe it anymore here in the United States. But just really wanted to bring some of those core Christian values back to this part of the country. So been really working hard with people, and it's just great to have people beside me. They feel like family, and we're all in this fight for the same reason.
Well, you know, what's interesting about California, I've lived 35 years on the East Coast, 35 years on the West Coast, and I'm a CPA. I was a partner with one of the big four firms and came to San Diego in that capacity. Ultimately, I ended up working with some folks to purchase a small office from Pricewaterhouse and build out a regional firm for the last 12 years, which includes the Temecula, Marietta, Fallbrook area. We have clients in your neck of the woods and in San Diego and also Southern California. We also have clients, some international clients through our work with Integra International. But what's interesting is while California gets painted with a broad brush as being kind of a blue left-wing state, there are quite a number of people who, like yourself, in cities like Fallbrook, Temecula, Marietta, really reject all of that. And you know, some of the biggest fights over CRT has occurred in the in your neighborhood there, in Fallbrook and Temecula. And they've rejected a lot of that. So it's an interesting part of the country that you know, don't think that L.A. and San Francisco, who are deeply blue left-wing cities, are necessarily representative of the rest of the state. You know, Orange County has historically been a very conservative county, and they have a lot of conservative Republicans, both in Sacramento and Washington. And San Diego County has shifted some, but we're working extensively with the Bill Wells campaign, District 51, and Matt Gunderson with his District 49. So we could end up with 3 out of the 5 congressional seats in our county, Kelly, this fall, going to Washington and you know, really rejecting a lot of the left-wing stuff that's currently being advocated by the left-wing Democrats that are their conservative or the congressmen for those areas.
And absolutely, Steve, you bring up a good point, and that is that I go all over the country and people find out I'm from California. I see it the way they do. I mean, everybody around me seems to be a conservative who hates what's happening in California. I can't find somebody in my circle or around me who actually agrees with it. So it's kind of crazy that it continues to happen. The legislation is written here in California that is absolutely against our will. And I know, obviously, I don't live in the metropolitan areas, but that's the only place I can think that there are people who have that kind of mindset, who want to see what's happening in California happen across this nation. The rest of us are scared, you know, and we want to make sure that we not only change it here in California, but we definitely make sure it doesn't spread across the nation. And as we see, maybe Kamala Harris will be the GNC nomination. She's from California, you know, and one of her VP choices could be Gavin Newsom. So it's I don't think so, but it's scary. But I will say, I don't see it. Do you see it? I mean, within my circle, with the people that I meet, the sports that my kids play, and in our school and our education, churches, everything I do, I see people who actually, you know, what you might think you're going to see in Iowa, you know, or Texas.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of this is just common sense. I think Kamala may make Biden look like Barry Goldwater. Who knows? But in any event, that, you know, is some great insight. And we just have to keep, you know, spreading the gospel, if you will, because common sense, you know, sometimes it's the old elephant in the room, and I don't mean the Republican elephant, but sometimes if you just stand up and challenge people's thinking a little bit, a lot of other folks will go along and say, you're right, you know, none of this made sense. You know, right now, San Diego, of course, is the open gateway on the border. You know, it used to be Texas and Yuma, Arizona, and now it's San Diego County. And not that we don't want to help as a nation, but it has to be a measured and a vetted situation. And so as a result, San Diego County is being flooded with, literally as we put this program on, hundreds of people every hour. So delighted today to introduce you to a good friend of mine, and that's Brad Cranston. Brad is the founder of Baptists for Biblical Values, and he's based in Iowa, and we're going to learn about why he's based in Iowa and some of his background. But let me tell you how we met. This shows the importance of networking. I have a good friend in Asheville, North Carolina, where I lived for a number of years and attended Bob Jones University just down the hill in Greenville, South Carolina. And during that time, I actually worked, had work loan scholarships at the university. I did two things. I waited tables. They fed 5,000 people in 20 minutes every night in this football field-sized dining hall. And a gentleman by the name of Phil Buck and I were waiters. And in those days, it was 90 cents an hour. But tuition was a lot less. And but we worked pretty hard for our 90 cents an hour, I have to tell you. But Phil and I became good friends. We were both accounting students at Bob Jones University and graduated there with accounting degrees. So we've stayed, Phil and I have stayed in touch over the decades as he's gone through different parts of the East Coast and myself and then ultimately in California. So one day, and I think, and Phil's been a great donor for the PAC, but one day I got this text or call from Phil. And he says, "You've got to meet this gentleman, Brad Cranston. He came to our church, Temple Baptist Church in Asheville, North Carolina, and spoke about the importance of Christians waking up and being involved in their state and local and federal governments." So that's how I called Brad up shortly after that and started talking with him. And before you know it, Brad was in San Diego at one of our PAC lunches and speaking and doing the invocations and whatnot. But so, Brad, tell us about your heritage and what all you've been doing starting out with your pastoral position.
Yeah, so it's great to be with you, Steve and Kelly, and I appreciate the great work that Save America Now is doing, and I'm glad the Lord allowed our paths to cross a couple years ago, and very happy to be with you folks today. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and went to Bible college, met my wife there. After college, 1988, went back to Pittsburgh for a few years as assistant pastor, then moved back to Iowa, where my wife was from, took a small church there, the church plant meeting at community college at the time to establish Church Now. And so there in Iowa, pastoring and small work, but the Lord burdened my heart the first for the political realm. I had a father who was conservative, actually went to Grove City College. And in fact, he's 88 now, still living in good health. Both my father and mother are still in good health. And so so I had that kind of background. And so I was concerned about civics. And our first kind of step into the water was at City Hall here in Burlington, Iowa, when they tried to pass a gay rights ordinance back in 2003. We successfully kept the city council from passing that until 2007, when Democrats up at the state house passed it on the state level. An interesting thing happened at that last meeting in 2007. We were at the city hall, and one of the council members who was really the most antagonistic towards this, he said, "Well," he said, "I guess you're just going to have to take this up to the state capitol." I didn't think anything of it at the time, but years later, I thought, you know, I had to go back and thank him for putting that idea in my head. And so in 2008, still pastoring, I woke up after the election of Barack Obama. And that morning, I just, it really weighed heavy on me, the direction of the country. And I just said to myself, I said, you know, if we don't do something, we're going to lose our liberty to preach the gospel, practice the gospel, everything we kind of come to take for granted as Christians for my entire lifetime, and probably somewhat before then. that's caused us to kind of disengage from civics. And so I called a few pastor friends, and we came up with a name that Steve mentioned. The case of Iowa, it's Iowa Baptist or Biblical Values, and came up, that was the fall of 2008. Spring of 2009, we really hadn't done anything with that, and we woke up to find out that Iowa Supreme Court had voted 7-0 to redefine marriage in Iowa. And I believe that was the third state at the time. I think maybe a state, maybe California on the East Coast, maybe Massachusetts on the West Coast, had gay marriage. But in the middle of the country, it just came as a shock that Iowa would be the third state to adopt and allow homosexuals and lesbians to get married and start giving them marriage licenses. So that I called my friends, my pastor friends I talked to the previous fall, and said, hey, if we don't do something now, we'll never do anything. We held some rallies around the state within a few weeks, had over 500 show up at our first rally. A fellow who currently today heads up the family policy group in Iowa, Bob Vanderplatz, was running for governor. He spoke. TV cameras were there. We were just shocked because of the interest that it generated. But people were so upset at that point because of what had happened with our Supreme Court. So that was kind of the beginning. Then after that summer, we held three rallies. Interestingly, two legislators who I didn't know attended. One attended one of the three rallies, and another attended another one, who later became instrumental. At that point, they weren't legislators. They were just starting to run, but they spoke at our rallies. Later, they became instrumental in some key legislation at the state capitol, some religious liberty legislation. But then in January of 2010, we had the rallies in the summer, and I said, okay, no more, you know, the rah-rah is good, but we need to actually do something. So we, myself and two other pastors, just went up to the state capitol. We didn't really have any, we knew one pastor, knew the Speaker of the House. He introduced us to the Speaker of the House as he walked by, but we didn't really know the process. We didn't know anybody. We just showed up. And that's what I tell people. The most important thing, if you want to know what you can do, you just show up. Show up at your city council meeting, show up at the county, whatever kind of county meetings you have, or the school board, or in our case, the state capitol. You show up as a believer, and the Lord will show you what to do from there. He'll burden your heart and show you what steps to take. But we showed up, and that's kind of how God opened the door and got us when we started going to the state capitol. So I'll pause there, Steve, and we can pick up with there. But that's kind of how we got the start.
Well, that is really intriguing. And even though you and I have known each other for a while, and Kelly saw you do the invocation and the in closing at the Trey Gowdy event, I don't think I really knew quite exactly how it started. But, you know, I forget who said this, but somebody said 80% of life is showing up. And I think that's actually very true, that, you know, if you take the initiative to do something, it's always amazing how things can happen. And what I find intriguing, I know you and your wife, and you have a number of children and grandchildren, that, you know, like what Kelly, you've got four sons. And,
four sons.
And we're all concerned about the really the next generation and whether or not we're going to have a constitutional republic that is really focused on preserving the fundamentals of what this nation is all about. So you got these now. Were these rallies, Brad, like outside rallies, or were they in churches, or where did you?
They were in churches. Okay. About 500 showed up at the first one. 400 showed up the second one. That's where the one fella, his name's Tom Shaw. He's no longer a rep. He became a rep and really ended up being instrumental in a number of years later in passing the what we called the Homeschool Freedom Bill that removed homeschoolers out from under the Department of Education. So today in Iowa, if you're homeschooling and the school district, you know, asks what your kids are doing, all you have to do is say we're homeschooling and shut the door So there's no more, there was some really top down, intervention from the state up to that point. And, that was an interesting story. I got a call a few minutes before the rally. We had already had our speakers lined up. Somebody said, "Oh, there's this fellow running as a rep and he wants to speak." And I was like, "I don't even know him." I said, "But okay, let him speak." Well, he started speaking. It was our, you know, our Baptist, we're the Baptist nomination. He started, I didn't know this at the time, it was the first time he ever gave a public speech.
Wow.
He was a police officer.
Wow.
I didn't know any of that. And he got up, he was just burdened for the state, for the country, and for the situation things were in. And by the way, if you're the people who are making the difference are the ones who are running for office because of what you mentioned, their kids, their grandkids, they're just burdened. And those are the people who are just really make a difference when they get to the state house and the Lord really uses. But Tom got up and he started his speech. Well, what he was saying was really good. And so some of the, he told me this much later, some of the pastors and people in the crowd of 400 people, they start, "Amen," you know, like they do in our Baptist churches.
Okay.
And he said, when that first happened, he said about blew him out of the water. He stopped, collected his thoughts, started again. Somebody did it again. He said later, he almost couldn't get his speech out because of the people who were encouraging him. But there was just a funny story that he became the fellow there. Then we went and held one more, had about 200 people in it down the southern part of the state. And the a Senate, a fellow who later ran for Senate, Dennis Good, who has led in our fight in religious liberty in the Iowa Senate now, since 2012, he attended that. I don't even remember. He remembers meeting me. I didn't know him. He was actually evangelical free, but he heard we were having this meeting and he showed up and he had been thinking about running for Senate. But anyway, he went home encouraged, ran for Senate, and to this day leads in protecting religious liberty in this, in our efforts here in the state.
So how did, let me ask you this, how did Iowa get in the shape? You know, you always kind of think of Iowa is cornfields and good old home style cooking and, you know, red-blooded Americans. How did they ever get to the point, like you mentioned, the third state to, you know, to ratify same-sex marriage? How did that ever happen?
Right. Well, in 2010, when we showed up the state capitol, we had a complete Democrat-controlled state. It was 56-44 in the House to Democrats. It was a majority Democrat in the Senate. It was 32-18 in our Senate. So we have 100 seats in the House, 50 in the Senate. We had a Democrat governor, Chuck Colver, and we had the 7-0 liberal Supreme Court that had just given us gay marriage. And by the way, that effort to overturn marriage, we learned later in the state to redefine marriage, was a 7-year, very well-funded, hand-picked people. That was all planned. Iowa's constitution is extremely difficult to change the process. That's not a bad thing. I actually think it's a good thing. I won't bore you with the details of that, but they knew that. So they knew if they could get the Supreme Court to overturn it, it would be hard for us, especially with Democrat control, to really get any kind of pushback that would actually push that back. So the point is, I was handpicked. It was a long 7-year process by the left to set that up. So that was the situation in Iowa. People are wondering, why is Iowa so blue at that point? Well, I think one thing is believers in Iowa had just kind of been absent from being involved in civics. Certainly at the Capitol, when we went to the Capitol in 2010. There was a family policy group there with some lobbyists. And they're still the ones there today doing great work. But they had no pastors. They had not been able to get pastors to come to the Capitol up to that point. So there was no voice with a biblical, strong biblical worldview. And to that point, at that time, out of 150 legislators, there was only 3 or 4 that had a strong biblical worldview. 2 or 3 of them did not even run again in the fall of 2012 because they were so discouraged, leaving us with just 1 or 2. and that's not enough to make a difference. So basically, Christians had abdicated the state house to the left. And so that's, and then the contrast that today, you know, and there's a lot of people wonder, well, how did Iowa, that was 2010, how did Iowa go today to where it is today? So today in our House of Representatives, you have a 64-36 Republican majority.
Wow.
In our Senate, we have a 34-16 supermajority, which we just picked up that last seat to give us the supermajority in 2022, which means now the Democrats in Iowa politics, there's only one statewide seat they have. I believe it's the treasurer. That's the only thing left. In 2022, we replaced a 40-year attorney general, Democrat attorney general, and maybe the auditor after 40 years, one of the other seats. So the only statewide seat, there's only one statewide seat held by the Democrats today. But by getting the supermajority, that was the last power. The Democrats could still block the governor's appointments. With a supermajority Senate, they can't even do that anymore. So literally, Democrats have zero power in the state of Iowa today. And of course, now you've got Kim Reynolds, a strong, very strong governor leading with a biblical worldview. Our Supreme Court is 4-3 conservative now. And that we just on Monday, Iowa, so this is another story I want to just say to make sure I get this in here. On Monday, Iowa will begin limiting abortions from 22 weeks to 6 weeks. So we have a heartbeat bill that we have been fighting to get to go into effect for 4 years. It's been passed twice by the House. Most recently, last summer, it was stopped by a lower court judge. But just a 3 or 4 weeks ago, the 4-3 majority court said that the heartbeat bill is constitutional. So by God's good grace, we'll at least limit about 2/3 of our abortions, maybe a little more than that, starting on Monday morning at 8 o'clock. That will go into effect. But so we have the conservative court, conservative judge. But here's a big thing, Steve, that is making a difference in Iowa. It's not just people with an R after their name. That is not as what changed Iowa. What has changed Iowa now is that instead of 3 or 4 legislators with a strong biblical worldview, you now have 25 to 30 legislators with a strong biblical worldview.
Well, I think that's
what's changed Iowa.
That is really remarkable. Kelly, you were going to comment?
Yeah, no, I'm just excited to hear that because I know you brought up same-sex marriage, and I'm out here in California also with Steve. And as you know, in 2008, we had Prop 8, where we actually voted, and we wanted to amend the Constitution and keep it man and woman is marriage. And it was actually the lower Supreme Court that overturned that decision and gave California. Now, California, you know, most people look over here and say, we are the most liberal state, you know, maybe next to New York, but we even voted it down. So to see that Iowa, you know, had same-sex marriage, it is surprising. But I'm just excited, Brad. I'd love to hear kind of what you guys have figured out. What is your strategy? How have you been so successful in getting people, not only Republicans, but Christians, people who love the Lord and are willing to stand strong on their biblical values when it comes to legislation? When it comes to people screaming at them on the left to give them their quote unquote right to kill babies. And I, by the way, you brought up the 6 weeks. I had twins and at 4.5 weeks, we saw their heartbeat. So it still makes me sad, but man, that is progress. And I'm so excited to hear it. So Brad, tell us a little bit, how did you guys succeed? What was your strategy?
Okay. And let me just mention in case I forget. So I am sure there will be a strong push. In fact, I believe there were 20 legislators in the House who signed onto a bill last year to protect life from the moment of conception. That we were waiting for the courts really to move on this heartbeat bill. So Iowa will be moving forward to try to get it beyond, like many other states now, I think 14 others. with some exceptions that have stronger bills. So that's something we'll be working on. But what changed? Well, you know, God is the one who raised up the legislators. Our organization really does not work. We don't have the depth to be able to go out and recruit candidates. The Lord raised those folks up over the years, which is a miracle. I consider it God's divine intervention. In fact, one of the lobbyists who has been at the state capitol now, he was actually a legislator. He's been up there. He actually started the Family Policy Group in Iowa years ago. He's a vice president now. And Chuck Hurley, great guy. And he made the comment to me, and he has a lot more experience at the Capitol than I do, that even the demographics of Iowa do not justify the number of believers that we have at the state capitol. In other words, it's a God thing. Because even demographically, we shouldn't have as many believers and as many people with a strong biblical worldview as we do. His claim to me is that Iowa has the most Christian conservative legislature, at least in the last 40 years, and maybe since the mid-1800s. And so God raised those folks up. We were there. Here's the key thing. We were there as pastors. So for the first 2 years, we had a pastor's day once a month. We have a part-time legislature, runs January to May. So we were there once a month. After 2 years, I said, you know, I've got to be there more than that to really get to understand what's going on and to build relationships. Everything that happens at the state capitol is based on trust, relationships and trust. That's true on both sides of the aisle. And I had to build those relationships. So I started going once a week. Now, the capitol is 165 miles away from my front door. I was still pastoring up until 2020. I was still pastoring full time, driving back. I took one day a week, would drive up to the capitol in the morning and drive back in the late in the afternoon. But I started being there on a regular basis, getting to know people, just building relationships, finding the believers. My goal was to identify the believers and encourage them and pray with them. So if we had a role, our organization, the greatest thing I think we've done is to be there to encourage legislators as they show up, as God raised them up, as they won, to be there to encourage them so that they would not quit and get help them overcome the discouragement in the environment in those early days. For the first 8 years, with the exception of that homeschool freedom bill in 2013, which is a miracle story in and of itself, that was passed. But other than that, we literally beat our heads against a brick wall to the point that at one point, I just told the Lord, look, this is senseless. You got to show me. I really came to the point where I almost said, hey, this doesn't make any sense. But we stuck with it, and then the Lord did work. And but the key is just being there and encouraging those folks. And we increased that 25 or 30 came about 4 or 5, anywhere from maybe 3 to 5 each election cycle. We would add a few more beginning in 2012. We would add a few more and a few more and a few more. And then things really, the dam really broke in 2016, when the same year that Trump won, we took back the Senate. We took back the House in 2012, Republicans did, but we didn't get the Senate back until 2016. So every good thing we did, with the exception of that homeschool freedom bill, from 2010 through 2016, stopped at the door of the Senate. And so we just, you know, soldiered on, but God continued to raise up these folks. So we were there to encourage them, keep them there. And then we became a resource for religious liberty legislation. The one thing that sparked that was back in 2014, that summer, the Houston pastors in Houston, Texas, were subpoenaed by the mayor of the city. Their sermons were subpoenaed. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do. Yeah.
Ted Cruz got involved in that. And And so that, so I dug into that, learned about religious liberty legislation, went to the legislature before the 2015 session and put together a PowerPoint with the good conservative, about a dozen of our good conservative legislators, and started talking to them about a Religious Freedom Restoration Act that I had just educated myself on. But, and then that took us 9 years, and we just got that signed into law on April 2nd of this year. Kim Reynolds signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act into law. We became the ninth state, but we became a resource for religious liberty legislation. And I'm for everybody who's at the Capitol who's doing anything good, praying with legislators. But a lot of ministries at the Capitol, as I work across the country, you know, even some cases pride themselves on being bipartisan. Now, the gospel is bipartisan. We try to reach everybody with the gospel. But we are there to support the good godly legislators, and we are there to see them pass laws that protect life, protect religious liberty, protect the biblical values. So, you know, you could say in that sense, we are not bipartisan in that we are trying to protect religious liberty. Lawmakers are there to pass laws. And in my personal view, to go to the state house and not talk about legislation and not work at getting good laws passed that protect religious liberty, is, you know, begs the question of why are you going? And so that's been our focus: encourage, pray, be a resource for religious liberty legislation, and then just stick with it till the Lord aligns the planets and things move forward.
You're listening today Brad Cranston, founder of Baptists for Biblical Values, and the Iowa story, which is really fascinating. We have a few minutes left, Brad, but can you share with us what you're doing now in other states?
Right. So 2014, some other pastors, I'm in the Independent Baptist is the denomination I was in, grew up in after my father accepted Christ in the late 1960s, reading Billy Graham's book, World of Flame. And that's we got into a gospel preaching church. And so that's been my denomination I'm affiliated with. And so 2014, some of those pastors reached out to me through another organization I work with, said, hey, we'd like to do the same thing in other states. And so we began to build similar organizations. I have a son who builds commercial databases. And so we have developed software that we are now actually in the process of marketing to other pro-religious liberty organizations. But we've developed software that connects people, churches, tracks bill, tracks a legislator, tracks voting records, sends out, Steve, you get the emails there in California.
Yes.
And so we use that as a tool in the states. And so now we've helped pastors in 11 states start similar organizations. And then I work aggressively in 7 of those. I stepped back from pastoring full time in 2020, found a younger man to take the church that I had pastored here for 28 years, and it's doing real well, a Heritage Baptist Church in Burlington, Iowa. And so I stepped back to focus my attention full time on this. So I travel in these states now, building these organizations, and then doing a lot of research behind the scenes to help pastors keep up with what's going on in their state capitals.
Well, thank you. Kelly, I think you had a comment.
No, I was just reading up, and I wanted to tell people they can get more information at baptistforbiblicalvalues.org, because, Brad, I love this website and how you talk about education, and it's so important that people, especially pastors, understand, you know, I know in a past show that Steve and I were talking about, we don't like the word politics, you know, but when we're looking at what is negative and positive legislation and how can we come around as Christians and influence that legislation, I just think that's a really great tactic. So I know that people can get more information there. So I just wanted to kind of direct people's attention that way as well, in case they want to get involved or want more information about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think you're open to donations if I'm correct on that, Brad.
Yes, there's a donate page. We are a 501c3. Now, that website is brand new. There's a map there of all the states we're in. In fact, there's some updates when I went into it today that they've just updated it. So there is a little bit of the information on the front that's not quite up to date, but we're working on that. But there's a donate link there, and we are a fully Baptist for Biblical Values. So we have the different organizations in the states, but now I have Baptist for Biblical Values that is a 501c3 and which accepts donations.
So, Brad, as we're wrapping up the program today, Kelly and I really appreciate your insight. We appreciate your initiative. I can remember having lunch with you, and just to encourage our audience, you shared with me how to best communicate with our local representatives. And as I recall, it's don't send any emails, don't send letters. What should they do?
The best thing is to just reach out to them, and you know, particularly if we're talking pastors, businessmen, just reach out to them and say, hey, can we sit down and have a cup of coffee together? Can we just meet them? You say, well, what will I talk about? Well, people like to talk about themselves. Ask them about the first time I meet a legislator, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on, I'm going to ask them, you know, hey, what motivate? Here's some good questions you can ask legislators or people in any level of government that you don't know. What motivated you to run for office? Everybody's always happy to talk about that. Ask them about their family. Ask them about their background. Ask them about the issues that are key to them. That's where you really learn what is motivating that person and whether they are someone who has a biblical, you'll know by the time you have asked those questions, get those answers, whether they're because of a biblical worldview or whether they're just because of the economy or whatever it is that motivated them. And you just begin to, you know, to talk to people face to face. And what I encourage people to do, go to City Hall, just sit in the back of the room and say nothing the first time. You don't have to say anything. Just go and sit there and maybe afterwards go up and meet a few people. You know, it's comes back to what we talked about at the beginning, Steve, which is showing up, praying up and saying, Lord, I'm not here to force open doors, but if you want me to be involved in this, I'll show up and you know, let your Holy Spirit show me what to do. And like I say, we've been at this now since 2003. So we're over 20 years now. So that's the other key. This doesn't happen. You don't influence people like anything else. You don't influence people. You certainly don't influence legislation, showing up one time. You got to be in this is a long, long haul battle.
Well, thank you, Brad. We've talked, Kelly and I have been talking today with Brad and Pastor Brad Cranston, founder of Baptist for Biblical Values. You can certainly find all about his organization on the web. And I just want to thank you for that insight and how you have taken the initiative and your folks in Iowa to turn a state that was deep blue into something red. So thank you very much, Brad, and we look forward to another week coming up here soon to talk about biblical Christian citizenship alive.
That concludes another powerful episode of Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. We thank you for joining us today as we tackled the crucial issues facing our beloved nation. Remember, we stand united for a pro-American, pro-family future deeply rooted in our foundational truths. The insightful discussions and passionate advocacy you've heard here today are just the beginning of our journey to reclaim our cultural integrity. Stay informed, stay engaged, and join us next week as we continue to shape a better tomorrow. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, let's keep standing strong for what matters most.